I am Connor from the House of El.
And I am Ray from the House of Zod.
We are two of the many, many survivors of Krypton's destruction, and we have made our home in Australia, and dare I say have become Australians, for better or worse. But we have also decided to read Superman comics, read Superman books, watch Superman shows, cartoons, movies, basically everything Superman, and from an Australian perspective as well. Whether you're a seasoned fan, like me,
or whether you are coming in fresh, wide-eyed, and wanting to learn more like me, then this podcast is for you. Join us for our bi-weekly adventures available on all good podcast catches.
So just search for Last Sons of Krypton, a Superman podcast. We'll be coming to you from Australia or some cosmic dimension, wherever we are that week.
Up, and away!
I'm Alan.
I'm Rebecca.
And you're listening to the DCAU podcast. This week we are covering Justice League War World.
Yes. I'm looking forward to this one, but it's nothing like the comic.
And, yeah, so since War World is originally a Superman story, we thought it appropriate to... Well, Connor asked if he could be on this episode, is what I've been told.
Hooray. Yeah.
So Connor McKenna is back on the podcast.
It's one of the action comics that I really enjoyed with Superman, and obviously Connor was reading at the same time, so...
Yeah. I'm here with my fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really based off any particular comic. I think it draws like absolutely nothing from the recent action comics thing. But I think there is some nods to like the original storyline with Mongol and War World back in the 80s. So very brief though.
Yeah. So this film, it follows Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. I mean, I'll be honest, the first half of the film is just, what if we tried to make all the DC showcases into one plot?
I mean, if anyone reads Marvel, it's a little bit like Battleworld. So
yeah.
I think that's the closest analogy, where there's all these alternate universe worlds attached to one central thing. And all the heroes are off doing, like, so you have one of them's like Planet Hulk, one of them's an old Wild West one. It has that kind of feeling. And it came out, you know, like, it came out of a time where it could have been influenced on that. It's just weird that they didn't really do anything with it as a concept. So for me, that's what it felt most similar to. But I love that idea. So I was well up for it. Yeah. So that's not a disparaging thing. All universes should have the ability to let their writers just go, hey, we quite fancy writing a bit like this. Let's just use these characters. At least it kind of binds it together rather than just random. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's do another Batman in a different time period story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest, I actually like the three mini stories before we get to the main one.
Yeah, I liked it.
They went up in interest for me.
So
it started off with the one I was least interested in, and then up to the one I was most interested in. And that, it's not just bias. I just thought I was a little bit.
No, I'm the same.
I was a little bit confused about Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
So that sort of put me off a little bit. And yeah, I mean, everyone knows my feelings about Batman. I'm just like, just kind of look and went, oh, okay, Batman. Connor had to explain to me who Warlord was, so
yeah.
I'm sure he will do the same for everyone who needs to know.
So we actually start, as we mentioned, with a Wild West setting following an alternative, Wonder Woman in Western times with... There are two comic book characters that show up in this. One of them is Batlash, who is a...
I have never heard of.
He is an established DC hero. He's been around since the 60s.
I mean, saying he's an established DC hero doesn't mean anyone will have heard of him.
No, absolutely not.
So, I mean, like, because there is, like, I feel the same about Warlord, apparently established. I never heard of him. So, I mean, like, there is a big difference versus Jonah Hex, who's, you know, had a film and stuff. So, yeah. But I accept that he's been around since the 60s.
Also, yes, so in this version of the story, Jonah Hex is the villain?
Yeah, that's what put me on my edge a bit, because it's just like, I didn't really understand why.
It confused me because, from what I gathered, like, from the characters I recognized, everyone else is kind of in character. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but, like, Jonah Hex is definitely out of character in this. Like, he's definitely not a child murderer or whatever he does.
The story is Wonder Woman rides into town. Jonah Hex and his gang have taken over this town because something about the residents owed money and they're all holed up in the bank.
Yeah.
And Jonah Hex is trying to convince Wonder Woman that, well, I'm on the side of law and order, these people owe money, they're not paying it, they need to be evicted, and unfortunately the way they do this is by shooting the first two people we see leave the bank and threatening to kill a young woman. Wonder Woman then intervenes, and then it's just a series of, we're going to throw things at the fortress until everyone dies.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a wagon of explosives sent, which blows up right in front of Wonder Woman. She's not phased.
Because she's Wonder Woman. Yep. Little phases her.
Jonah Hex pulls out a Gatling gun out of nowhere, which Wonder Woman is able to destroy. There's a weird scene where Jonah Hex kills three of his own men in a shootout.
It's just mind-numbingly strange.
Eventually, it ends with Wonder Woman having to chase down a train that's filled with explosives. And she deliberately throws it into the bank with everyone out of it so the money gets blown up.
Because money is evil.
Which Batlash takes to mean, oh, we don't need to fight anymore. Jonah Hex decides they need to fight some more and kills him. And Wonder Woman wordlessly beats Jonah Hex to death.
Yeah. It's a new version of her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen quite a lot of Westerns. And, you know, this is obviously just their sort of generic lone gunman thing, but with Wonder Woman, and it just didn't really interest me that much. Like, there was some cool moments and stuff. If it was a better, like, I don't know, someone more compelling than Wonder Woman in the lead role, maybe, but she's kind of, like, doesn't really say much. And, you know.
I just think they don't take enough risks with changing her as a character to make her fit the world worse. I don't know.
It
ends up just being, it could be anyone there. Yeah, I mean, I feel the same, bit same about Batman. Could kind of be anyone.
Batman is different.
Rather than change. To be fair.
Wonder Woman doesn't seem to change at all in her story.
No. It's like they're almost scared of changing her in many instances.
Fudge and boring,
I think that's part of the problem, is because they're so scared of, like, messing with her, because she's, like, the biggest female superhero probably on the planet, like, in terms of recognizability.
Yeah.
And, I understand why people are a little bit more weird about, like, why companies are worried about that a bit more, but I do think that means she suffers from being a little bit boring. Because of it, and I think that's the problem, and I think it kind of does come out here, and it's also like, I don't know, it's just,
to
it
be
feels
fair,
like
Anytime
it wouldn't matter that much if she wasn't there.
To be fair, anytime they've done, let's do something different with Superman, it's been, let's have a Superman that kills, or Superman that's evil. So at least it, I don't know if it's...
But they don't do that in this.
But not in the comics. Oh, not, I mean, I think there's a wider... Because I don't disagree, and they do it a lot in the comics, but I think there's a wider range of it in the comics. I mean, clearly Batman has the most of that, because people are like, well, he's loved enough that we can do whatever we want, you know.
There's been plenty of Superman Elseworlds and alternate stories where he's not bad or he doesn't kill. They just don't get the exposure that, you know, Injustice sort of, and like Red Sun do. But there's like plenty, you know, I can name at least five off the top of my head where he doesn't. It's just they don't get the adaptations like Batman does, where, you know, Batman in 1800s, Batman in steampunk, blah, blah, blah. And he's, you know.
Also.
But yeah.
One thing I didn't pick up in this film, and it was actually, of all the people, it's Connor, who hasn't watched all the Tomorrowverse films, who picked this up.
Yeah.
This is meant to be Justice Society World War II Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Connor had to tell both of us that, I think. Like, I was like...
It's just... Yeah,
I know it's the same actress, but that's literally all I could tell. Well,
They didn't really give her a different outfit than, like, a regular Wonder Woman outfit, so... That's why it's kind of like, if you're not like paying close attention, which, you know, because I haven't watched this since August, but when I watched it, I was paying close attention and taking notes because, silly me, I thought we were recording this soon. Man of Tomorrow. I have since lost all my notes, unfortunately, because they're on my phone. But yeah, Wonder Woman was saying, like, I was paying close attention, and she said to Clark that he is younger than her, Clark, and he's just a baby, basically.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, okay, she's the... Justice Society Wonder Woman, but Superman and Batman, I believe, are just from their own universe because Batman's popped up in the Superman Tomorrowverse. So,
this
which I think Crisis explains more. I haven't seen Crisis yet, but
also the other thing as well. This Superman's just a baby, so that's why the next film is going to be the end of this a trilogy that ends this universe.
Well, I mean, we don't, like, I don't want any spoilers, because I haven't watched it yet, but I know they're adapting Crisis on Infinite Earths, but these guys don't exactly...
We haven't watched it yet either, so...
They don't exactly, like, adapt things one-to-one, so...
No.
Like, it could very well, like, it could not be... another Apocalypse War, you know, like, we could still have these characters after Crisis. Because I know they wanted to do Kingdom Come, and as we mentioned, what's his name? James Gunn shot them down directly, so...
Please tell me that was sorry, intentional.
No, but it was pretty good.
What pun?
Gunn shot them down. Shot.
Right.
No, it wasn't intentional, but it was good.
Because James Gunn's name has two N's, so...
Yes.
But yeah. But so, when I was first watching this, I was like, is each vignette supposed to be saying about something about who the characters are at their core? And then when I got to the Superman one, I think I abandoned that theory.
I kind of agree. That's what I thought it was going to be doing, which is what I always think that any alternate universe... is aiming for, to say that there is something about these characters that makes them them.
Yeah.
And even like the Superman turned evil ones, and I don't think they were doing it. I think it was just a nice little shtick for them.
Well, any argument for that is completely contradicted by the seconds of the alternative stories.
That's where I was thinking it, funnily enough. I'm like, are they trying to say that Batman's not, like, a good person? And I thought that was really interesting. And then we got to the Superman one, and I'm like, okay, my theory holds no water, because it just turns out that Wonder Woman's boring. That's, like, the answer. And, you know, we don't have any... Yeah, and then what they do with Batman is, like, confusing, because I don't know why they would do what they did with him in that short...
No.
Like, if that wasn't what they were going for, so...
Yeah. I mean, so anyway, so this next piece of story is an adaptation of the Warlord series, which is from the 1970s.
And again, never even heard of it.
So it's like one of DC's genre fiction books.
Yeah, which, I mean, as you explained to me, and it sounds cool, so...
Yeah.
There are four volumes of it. It's been first series was the 1970s, and the most recent volume was in 2009 to 2010.
It's very
I mean, that's quite a while ago.
Yeah,
sword and sorcery pulp sort of thing set in. I believe it's set in DC's distant past. I might be wrong on that, and that sort of thing changes a lot.
So,
Underground World of Skitaris, strongly reminiscent of Edgar Allan Poe's Pellucidar. Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe is the other thing I was thinking of. Anyway,
so we open to, it's all quite clear it's a medieval battleground, or well, we'll later find out it's an alternative planet battleground. Fire and bodies are everywhere. The last of the opposing forces is a mercenary wearing a bat helmet voiced by Jensen Ackles.
Yeah.
So, he is defeated in battle by Warlord, who is the rightful king.
Yeah.
And they're in conflict with a wizard called Demios. Who originally I thought, oh, they might actually be doing something interesting with, and then he turns into a snake.
I mean, that is cool, though.
It's cool, but the idea that it then becomes, oh, he's not actually a wizard, he's just using technology.
Yeah, it was...
It's been done before, but it's an interesting idea.
Well, it's like Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
I guess, except, you know, he did turn into, like, a robot snake, but anyway.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, like, what they said at the end, how, like, what was the explanation for these vignettes and how they tied together?
That these were things that came from Martian Manhunter's imagination.
Okay.
Yeah, which means Martian Manhunter canonically hates Jonah Hex and wants him to be a bad guy.
So he didn't have a reason for putting them in the respective worlds?
No,
not really.
No.
Okay.
Well, apparently he was trying to influence it so what happens when the third story happens, he's trying to get them all together.
Because, you know, you have, like, another reason is, I don't know, like, Wonder Woman plays someone who's, you know, protecting people, which, to be fair, is, like, every superhero is like that. But, hey, you know, Superman plays a investigator, yeah. Right? Which is, like, that works with his character. He's an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
And then Batman's like it. So I thought they were saying something, but I just, now that I'm reflecting on it, I'm not sure, like, Batman just sort of doesn't.
The categorization of this version of Batman is he is a completely ruthless mercenary. He's willing to betray anyone. He is willing to kill people. It's the only thing that you could maybe say is an aspect of Batman is this idea of Batman doesn't think he's a good person.
Yeah. Yes, you know, if we want to go further with that, it could be how he thinks of himself. I mean, that's reaching, but you know.
But one thing that he does have is there are still various instincts which are quite obviously Batman instincts. So like as they approach Demios's castle, Batman says, "We might want to wait till night," and then this is a planet, there's no such thing as night.
Which yeah,
sounds fun. Also, at one point, he has weird visions of Joker, Catwoman, and Mr. Freeze.
Because we can't have a movie without the Joker. It just can't happen.
I mean, was Harley there? Was she singing?
I mean...
Because, like, you know...
Yeah.
We've had a little... That's at least something good.
So... The party... The party basically goes through a series of challenges where they fight various creatures, and the team gets whittled down until it is just Batman, Warlord, Machiste, who is a rather large warrior with a mace for a hand, and Mariah, who's, I don't know, I take it must be another major character in the Warlord stories.
I'm guessing must, yeah.
They eventually arrive at a mountain that is...
She famous. Is, yeah. Sorry.
But...
Thank you.
Thank you. They arrive at Demios's castle, which is up the top of a mountain. Mariah gets kidnapped by a flying creature, and Machiste walks into a trap that dissolves him into bone.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I really like this short. That is like, pretty it was just like a cool sort of sorcery romp that
it
just
was very
wasn't...
different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you, I mean, yeah. It didn't really do anything new. It was just kind of like a love letter to Sword and Sorcery. But
yeah,
it was also like, we see that less than we see someone do the generic Western take.
Yeah.
So I was into it more. And, you know, someone dissolving to bone, it's cool. It's a cool
it
trap.
It did kind of remind me of the Commandy showcase that we watched a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Makes
yeah.
sense.
They then end up with the final pet fighting a Minotaur. Warlord then ends up on the wrong side of a gate with Batman. Batman this whole time has been chained to Warlord. And then once Batman manages to convince Warlord to let him free, and the second he lets him free, he goes, okay, I'm off, bye-bye. So he arrives in a Batman arrives in the treasure room, finding Mariah and a slave that Batman recognizes, who looks a lot like Wonder Woman and is voiced by Stanley Katich. So, yes, it's Wonder Woman.
Oh, God, I forgot that they called Wonder Woman Angel.
Yeah, me too.
What I mean, what's less subtle, that or, like, when she appears in white with a halo over her head in Red Sun?
So...
Good grief, as Charlie Brown would say.
So it turns out that Demius' magic wand is a gun.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, at least that kind of ties into Batman, right?
Yeah.
Demius then tells Batman to kill Mariah, you know, the character that Demius has had at his mercy for the last 5 minutes. Batman refuses, and just as Demius is about to shoot him, Batman is hit out of the way by the Minotaur's head that Warlord throws at him.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
After freeing Mariah and Wonder Woman, the four of them fight Demios, who turns into a giant snake.
Mm.
And Wonder Woman finds her lasso.
Lasso. Do you not say lasso?
Lasso, I don't know. It's golden rope, what makes people tell the truth.
Okay, I'm just wondering like where the pronunciations come from, because I've always said lasso.
I don't...
I'm wondering if lasso is American.
I don't know. For someone whose mother tongue is English, I do a very bad job of speaking it.
Well, no, that's it. Just may be where you've heard it said. It's not a, a big deal. It wasn't meant to be a big issue. Just wondered.
Yeah. Alan Rebecca's out of control.
No, I'm right. I'm just right. I just went to look it up though. You
on my podcast, this doesn't happen. I'm just
What, that I don't complain about pronunciation.
I'm just kidding.
Lasso is the American pronunciation, but that's fine because you're more than likely have only heard it from American media. I don't know.
Point was actually Ted Lasso.
That too. Well, that's American media, so my point stands.
Oh, is that American? I thought it was British. Okay.
No, it's American. But I also thought the show was called Ted Lasso until I started watching it. So, same difference. So yeah.
So, whilst this is happening, Warlord also remembers that his name is Travis Morgan, and he's been trapped in this world for years.
Yeah.
So
that's sad.
Which is Warlord's alter ego, I suppose. Because he was like a... Again, it's kind of like Edgar Rice Burroughs' John Carter, where he's a pilot that ends up in this alternate world, or this different world to fight for its freedom.
So... Oh, yeah, that's one other thing. I completely forgot to mention. Anytime someone asks either Batman or Wonder Woman, what's your name... Where do you come from? They don't remember.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And then the issue is it then, I think by the end of the film, I don't think everyone's memory is back.
Okay.
Or certainly, I'm not sure about Batman or Superman. Wonder Woman's memory is back.
Interesting. That is interesting.
So, Batman and Wonder Woman are offered to join the chase off Demios. Warlord offers, oh, you can stay and help us. But instead, a portal arrives and Wonder Woman and Batman travel through it. Into the black and white universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Yeah, I really liked the Warlord vignette. I was pretty bored during the Wonder Woman one, but I definitely perked up during the Batman one. And I thought like what they did with his character was interesting, and I think they were trying to say something about his character. Unfortunately, I didn't rewatch it too recently, so I can't really elaborate. But and I could be wrong, so you know. But regardless of that, it was still enjoyable. And
it was all right, yeah.
There is actually one thing that could be relevant to the Crisis films, actually. I completely forgot. At one point, randomly, an old man appears for a few seconds. He looks like he's wearing some sort of Flash outfit.
Of course he is. I really couldn't give a... about the Crisis film. Like, I just don't think these films have come out in any sensible or like in any way that would really make you, unless you're doing what we do, actually pay attention. Like,
I'm gonna say the Crisis animated films cannot be worse than CW's Crisis adaptation. It just can't. There's no way
it could have the same budget. Actually,
like, you know, it's just there's. I can't see it happening. So, like, the bar is, you know, in Tartarus right now. So, I feel like we could just go up. And I'm kind of keen to see the Crisis movie now because of that. So,
I am. I just don't. I don't feel like they've. I expect them to either flashback to every clever Easter egg they feel they've dropped, or like I just don't feel there was any particular reason for me to notice these in the films. Like, don't feel coherent enough for universe to me. This is what I've kind of said to Connor earlier about, like, picking where they take Wonder Woman from and that is, like, I just... Every time I start one of these films, and I know it's probably apparent to people listening, I just take it for what it is because there's been so many different ones and, like, they don't feel like they're all part of one universe, even if I'm told they are.
I mean, I remember, like, the appeal with Air Doubt Superman Man of Tomorrow and how it would be, you know, it wouldn't really be adapting anything specific. It'd be a new story and all that stuff. But that's what I was really keen for. And then they seem to really quickly just fall back into adapting things, but worse. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, and now we're getting Crisis. Cool. Because, like, you know, I can't... No one wanted to see that.
See Crisis. I get the impression it was a bit of... Right, we need to end this universe very quickly. Let's do a Crisis.
I'm hoping that's not the case, but if this universe hasn't been doing that well financially, I can it definitely hasn't been doing well critically. So I can definitely see that being the case. I hope it's not, though.
The other thing that could well be is, again, because I know that apparently the James Gunn takeover is an entire takeover, and if this is, we want to end everything that's not related to, or that's not been signed off, or whatever the...
Yeah, and then James Gunn is going to leave in 2 years, and we go through this all again.
Pretty much.
Well, I mean, the Tomorrowverse has literally lasted less time than this podcast.
I'm annoyed because, Superman is dying. You know, we got a good Superman movie, and again, I didn't get a goddamn sequel.
it's as well. There are good things with Tomorrowverse. Tomorrowverse did not fall into the trap that the DC AMU fell into, which is, right, we need to fill some time. Let's just have a Batman film.
Yeah.
In that, I think more than half of the DC AMU films are focused on Batman or Damian Wayne. At the point where I'd even argue Damian Wayne's the main character in Justice League Dark. Characters.
Yeah.
Well, you mean Apocalypse? Well, he is one of the main characters. He's definitely not the main character.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then are tears bringing back to life.
So, anyway, I always think it's telling when we end up not talking about the movie.
That, to be fair, that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. When I'm here anyway.
So, anyway, we go to the final of the kind of vignettes, which is set in the 1950s in the town of Grover's Mill, where Clark Kent and King Faraday are investigating reports of a crashed UFO.
Yeah. So from, the trailer and the get-go, this is obviously the part I was the most interested in. A, because it's Superman, but B, because it's, Superman in, an investigator role and having to use his wits and stuff. Unfortunately, this didn't really... I feel like get the time that the other two vignettes did.
It did feel shorter. I didn't pay attention. I didn't actually go and time them, but it did feel shorter.
I mean, it was good while it lasted, but I think it should have been longer and more focused on Clark as opposed to the three of them.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's the one story where... So, yeah, the first person they encounter is Highway Patrolman Officer Wayne.
Yeah.
So all the witnesses to the event are in a diner. There is someone who's meant to be a riff on James Dean. The other characters are all generic couple, long-haul driver.
Your standard witnesses that you'd find in the 50s.
Yeah.
So, you know, this really, obviously... You know, spaghetti westerns and stuff is the Wonder Woman thing, and then the Batman one, Sword and Sorcery, Conan stuff, and this one really reminded me of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but what it really more reminded me of, in fact, the plot seemed almost identical, was if anyone's seen the Twilight Zone episode, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up?
Oh, no, I haven't, but that sounds cool.
I haven't, and that might explain a lot.
It's a winter night and someone is investigating, reports of this Martian or something. They've got to find a Martian in a diner, and one of the people in the diner is a Martian.
To be fair, they do subvert that.
Yeah.
So...
Really good Twilight Zone episode, but yeah.
That's very cool.
Very predictable, though. But anyway.
I mean, Twilight Zone's episodes are generally a little bit predictable, yeah. But there's something... Great. I mean, that's to us that have got much more exposure to sci-fi.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And fantasy and stuff like that. I mean, they're still really well put together most of the time and well worth the watch of the ones I've seen.
Yeah.
I have to say, the idea of doing this as a... that concept of Clark Kent hunts aliens in the 1950s whilst not being Superman does actually sound like an interesting idea.
That'd be a good Elseworld, for sure. I'd read that.
Rather than Steampunk Batman, the third version.
Yeah.
I like the Doom that came to Gotham. Anyway, so... There is a final witness who is a woman who has no idea what her name is, and it takes her a couple minutes to go, Miss Prince. Wonder Woman. But the second that she's acting kind of strange and saying she has no memory of how they got there, she immediately starts to get suspected. All the diners start to get incredibly paranoid. Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne and Diana Prince notice that there is weird music in the background.
Yeah.
And it's the second movie in the space of 24 hours that I've seen that where pheromones used a lot. Because it just... shows up in Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, the AI film.
Right. To be fair to them, it's three graphics that don't impact the story at all. That's what makes it more frustrating in a way.
Could they or could they not have got an artist?
Oh, they could easily have got an artist to do it. That's what's annoying about it.
Yes, let's carry on.
I would like to go at some point, and if we start talking about AI, it's just like...
Yeah.
And it's terrible, because apparently this wasn't in the original... It wasn't in the original cut of the film, and the film's really good! Look, really good. It's one of the best films I've seen in the last 5 years.
I mean, it's fine, because it's horror, so I'm never going to watch it. But anyway, back to this.
Yeah. So... I'm the one being kept to task, Jesus. So the trio then, anytime they touch each other, they get weird images in their head. Faraday then pulls a gun on the trio of them. The long haul driver then attacks Superman, who punches him so hard he goes the length of the building and through a jukebox, apparently killing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's all imagination world, right? So,
yeah.
You know.
Only for it to be revealed that the truck driver was the alien.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, wait. Everyone apart from the main three is an alien.
You know, I did like that twist. Again, having seen the Suicide Zone.
I actually did like it as well.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they might have seen where it's just like, oh, one guy's in, it's like, oh, everyone's the alien.
I always like it when they pull that. I'm not gonna mention any other similar plots because they might be spoilers for things people haven't seen. But I always love when they pull that. Oh no, it's everyone. If they do it well, you will always get a chuckle out of it because it's a great misdirect.
Yeah.
So we then get a chase between the three in a car and the aliens. I mean, spoiler alert for later in the movie, they're all white Martians.
Yeah.
So they see, they eventually come up to where the ship crash landed into a barn. They realize that the ship is an illusion. And the three of them walk into a room, realizing that they're in a simulation room and there is an alien in the room.
Da, da, da.
So King Faraday follows them and goes, oh, this alien must be the leader. I should kill him. Clark then gets shot by Faraday, which does nothing. Mm-hmm. And after knocking out King Faraday, the alien wakes up and the room changes, revealing that everything apart from King Faraday was an illusion.
Which is great.
Also, the other thing, now color is back.
Yeah.
Which is why Superman's bulletproof now, because he's exposed to color light. I don't know. So what we do know is that in the chair, the head alien is Martian Manhunter.
Of course. I mean, we knew that was going there once we had Martians, right?
Yep. And to be fair, he's one of the characters that is established in this universe as existing.
Yeah.
A fight breaks out with white Martians attacking. After Martian Manhunter's freed, he reveals everyone's real name and identities and states he was forced to create these illusions because they're on Warworld and the planet is a weapon that is powered by negative emotions. And they've been trapped there for months.
Yeah. I can't remember if the idea of Warworld being powered by negative emotions has been done before. It might have been done in Phil Kennedy Johnson's run, but there was like a lot going on. I can't really remember, but like, I think it's a really cool idea regardless.
Why? What is it normally? Is it just... is it an entertainment thing, or how is it normally depicted in comics?
Warworld?
Yeah.
Well, it's like a giant floating planet that shoots missiles at people. and it like it's a giant planet that's a weapon of mass destruction, basically. And you know, the usually inhabited by the Warzoons, or like they're extinct and Mongols take it over. Like, well, world has a few different origins.
Right.
But yeah, it's the movie definitely got it, you know, pretty close from what I saw. So,
I mean, the only thing I know about Warworld is that. Is that it's tied into the villain Mongol, who does show up, but not straight away, because instead we get Lobo.
Yeah, that cheered me up.
Hooray! I mean, we didn't even get Rebecca's favourite idea for a movie, which is just Lobo and Harley Quinn on a road trip singing songs.
To be fair, we'd probably be alright, actually. Like it is one of those weird things that it would probably be all right because it would like play into it. It's the forced interaction with things that don't play into it that makes me sort of that jars, not the the other stuff. So
I don't know. I thought it was fine. Like, I think we all liked him in Man of Tomorrow, and
yeah.
You know, if he's a really good bounty hunter, why wouldn't Mongol hire him? Like, we're on the cosmic level at this point, so
yeah.
So Lobo then knocks out our three heroes, who then randomly wake up somewhere else in the ship, which is a chamber where hundreds of clones are being made, including Jonah Hex clones.
Yeah.
Bruce is somehow able to work the computer. He has no idea how. That's what I mean.
Look, I mean, are they clones?
Well, there's multiple copies of one person, so yeah. I thought they were all... use the word clone.
Oh, okay. I thought they were all from different universes, but that makes
the way it's kind of described is various people have been captured over the years, and they're now being cloned for use in other scenarios.
Right. Okay.
So, for instance, you do see Jonah Hex in a tube. You see multiple versions of someone else, can't remember who.
Yeah, I'm just going to say most of this Warworld section should have been Justice League Warworld Part 2 and gotten the appropriate time.
Yeah, absolutely. They've basically, in a weird way, a lot of this film then becomes Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 0.5, because it is literally just to lead right to... The end is literally a teaser for Crisis.
Yeah, as soon as Harbinger showed up, I was like, oh, really? Like, I was honestly expecting this to lead into a sequel.
I thought that as well. Yeah.
They would fight Mongol and Warworld for the whole film. And then it was like, oh, that thing happened, which we'll talk about soon. And I was like, okay.
So the trio find their suits.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lobo presents Martian Manhunter to Mongol. Mongol then explains, I've been traveling through realities for millennia, picking up he's looking for the key to actually use Warworld as a weapon.
Which is a thing from the original story. The Martians have a key that can do that, and he's looking for it. And Martian men
are
involved in stopping them. In like Manhunter gets Superman to help him stop Mongol from getting the key that the Martians made.
They also the crystal key. Talk about the loggers, which would the loggers were. I don't know if they're the ones that built Warworld or whatever. But so anyway, Mongol then explains, well, we figured out it was the Martians. But everywhere we've went is only white Martians, so you're the only green Martian, not just in this world, in the multiverse. Which, considering Crisis on Infinite Earths is going to establish several universes from other shows where Martian Manhunter exists.
And the Largus, weren't the ones that created Warworld, but in the comic they were a peaceful race that found Warworld, created the key that they gave to the Martian race, so that no one could use it.
So at this point, Mongol tortures Martian Manhunter. We have the conversation we kind of referenced earlier. Wonder Woman going, "Oh, Superman's a baby."
Yeah.
I thought it was quite sweetly. I don't think it was quite as cheesy.
I liked it.
I don't think it was quite as badly done as that.
And at least as I said, it's the one time we establish, right, this might not be a Wonder Woman that these people actually know. And that's what I mean by we don't establish the memory, because that scene would be, well, neither of us have met you. We've heard Flash mention you, though.
Yeah.
And again, that would have been a more overt way to say, this is not Wonder Woman, this is Wonder Woman from this movie.
I mean, the last 20 minutes of this movie are an entire film just crammed.
Yes. That's the problem. That is the problem.
So, just before they arrive, Lobo breaks Martian Manhunter's cuffs and basically goes, "Hey, I'm gonna give you one shot at Mongol. do what you can." Lobo then proceeds as Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman get ready to jump in, Lobo distracts Mongol, and then a mass breakout event starts happening.
Yeah.
Because it turns out Lobo planned to betray Mongol the whole time.
Yeah.
Of course. So that was pretty cool. That actually was pretty cool, so...
And he goes, "Oh yeah, and I didn't kill Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman." So, a fight breaks out between everyone, all the heroes and the White Martians. And it turns out that... as I said, Martian Manhunter isn't actually the key. Also, he reveals, Lobo, I was manipulating you the whole time as well. Because it turns out Martian Manhunter on his own isn't the key. He needs to merge with a white Martian.
Of course, that is kind of weird.
And then he sets off the self-destruct sequence in the planet.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lobo and Mongol are fighting, which is the only time we establish anything like, does Mongol have abilities, or is he just a funky looking alien?
They really assume that you know who Mongul is.
Yeah, they do, and I always have to think about it.
So. And he's a character the problem is, he's a character that's not, because I look back through this, he's not shown up in any of the films we've covered. Not even like the Dwarves, he's not shown up in anything. No. I think Mongal has shown up once.
Mongul is in, he is in Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, but he has no voice lines, and he's basically a goon.
Right, okay. Is,
you know, sent to capture Batman.
So he was a funky looking goon.
Mongul had a real problem in the 90s of being just a goon when he's supposed to be this force that rivals Superman. But anyway, that's another topic. Yeah. Also, Mongul in this film.
Is it basically he was what Doomsday has now become in the writer's mind? A character who can go toe-to-toe with Superman in a straight fight.
I mean, there was like, I mean, kind of. Like, it, the whole thing is, you know, we had this initial Mongul storyline, and he was like a grapefruit mix of, like, Darkseid and Thanos in terms of his visual design. And there were, like, good stories, right? But what really made Mongul famous was the Alan Moore story for Man Who Has Everything, where, like, Mongul basically, like, you know, does the worst thing to Superman, like, mentally as, like, a form of revenge for blowing up Warworld. And so, like, if you're a Superman fan, you know who Mongul is because you have read that story. Mm. And, like, the way he was written, he's absolutely, like, this intimidating force. You know, he kicks the crap out of Wonder Woman. That being said, Wonder Woman was less powerful, like, in the 70s, or the 80s, sorry. But, he was conceived, like, as a villain to physically challenge Superman. So I guess he kind of on point as, like, the right. Doomsday.
Doomsday, if Doomsday was capable of thought.
Yeah, he's smart. Well, I don't want to say he's smart, but he's not, like, he's not stupid. Like,
Doomsday supposed to be stupid?
Stupid, more kind of very, very tunnel vision. I don't think we've seen a version of Doomsday that is capable of any more thought than find opponent, punch him.
I mean, he ends up being able to talk and stuff, but the thing with Doomsday, he's never like Mongul in the sense where Mongul, like, has aims to, like, I want to get this big floating planet that shoots missiles. You know, Mongol's physicality is not his end game. It's just part of what he does.
Right.
And the other thing with Mongul is he had a real resurgence recently in the Action Comics run. There was a massive story arc with Superman and the Authority trapped on Warworld.
Yay.
And Mongul saw a new sort of surge of popularity. Because he was never, like, the most popular villain. Like, he was known for that Alan Moore story, but yeah. And it's interesting because this was announced, like, really close to that run was ending. So people were like, oh, are they, like, going to tie that? Is this going to be, like, an adaptation of that run? But they're putting the Justice League in there. And then, like, no, it's not. And Mongul's also, like, really skinny in the movie. Like, he looks really weird. But the comics have established that there's multiple Mongols, and all of them are called Mongul, and they all kill the previous Mongol, so maybe this is another Mongol.
it's just the number of times you just said Mongol just made me laugh.
They all really hate Superman as well. That's the other thing they have in common. So
I mean, yeah.
Makes sense. Sorry, that was my attempt to sort of give you context of who this guy
is. No, I liked it.
Yeah, it was good to actually get some description because...
Yeah,
he's just kind of like, oh, okay. He is, as I said, if you have no idea who this character is, I mean, it's a little bit, it's the term you used as well in a chat before this. It's the problem with a lot of the latter MCU films is that you have to have seen the previous stuff for this stuff to make sense.
Well, so, like, even if it makes sense, if you want to, like, appreciate the film fully, you need to, which is why I kind of use Thor as an example, because I know my mum's a fan, but like, there's just so much that happens in between each Thor film, you know?
I agree. No, it was a good example. It was just, I was telling them that my sister's only seen like 4 MCU films and just randomly is fine with them, but I just think she just doesn't care. Yeah. I think she just, okay, yeah, whatever.
If you watch the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy, the first two do link together. The third one, you're like, wait a minute, this person was dead?
Yeah, no, but like, I think she came to see Endgame, and she's definitely seen Captain Marvel, and she's definitely seen one of the Thor films, probably Love and Thunder. Okay. No, the previous one, Ragnarok. And then I don't know if she's, and then maybe Iron Man. Like, I think it's like really spans the whole thing. And I remember laughing about her coming to Endgame, having not seen any of the others. And it's just very much like when I used to read comics as a kid, just picking one off the shelf and just going, okay, that's the status quo. But it is a bit weirder these days because we've all got you. It's a lot easier to have watched them all. So
yeah. Well, that's all of them bar No Way Home on one streaming platform. It's one of the few franchises you can actually track. So anyway, it becomes clear, right, because I think at one point the three heroes had the option of, well, we could just escape the planet. They're not going to escape now because the planet's about to blow up. And just before the planet blows up, a purple woman with flaming hair, who I now know is Harbinger, I didn't at the time.
That's pretty cool.
I thought it might have been...
pretty cool. Yeah.
I thought it might have been the personification of the House of Mystery that we saw in Justice League Dark.
It would have been better. I would have liked to have been anyone but Harbinger.
Also, we found out later, apparently this version of Harbinger is actually Supergirl.
Oh.
Like, it describes as Harbinger Kara Zor-El. It says it in the credits.
Who reads the credits, Alan?
I guess we'll get that in Crisis. Mm-hmm.
That's
pretty cool.
So, the three of them then arrive on an alien ship, and they're told by Harbinger, a crisis is coming and it will be the annihilation of all things, and that's the end of the film.
So this is where I was just like, no, no, you know, I was like, no, don't do Crisis, why? And I was, again, as I said, I was expecting a Warworld sequel till, you know, Mongol died. and then I'm just like, what the heck? Like, this Crisis thing, was that just tacked on? Like, you know, because
to be fair, they have been kind of setting it up the last couple of films.
Well, that's even worse, to be honest. The fact, like, that this isn't tacked on is worse to me. Because, yeah, it's just like, fudge off, you know, I don't, like, we don't want to see Crisis. Like, show us Warworld instead. You know, a Warworld story. A Warworld story that's not, like, 20 minutes and, you know, has a skinny Mongol who dies and...
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, so, also, you know, whatever. This is not the first time they've made questionable decisions. So, hey, you know, screw it. Guess I'll just watch Crisis and see how it is.
So the next time we're in the Tomorrowverse, it's part one of the three Crisis on Infinite Earth films, only one of which is currently out at the time of the release of this podcast. Part two comes out the 23rd of April.
They need to never use the word Crisis again.
God, they do.
To be fair, the word Crisis has only been used in one title for any of the films that we've done. And that was Crisis.
But it keeps getting used in comics. Like, they keep milking...
We're not just talking about the films.
They keep milking this event, which has arguably had a very negative impact on comics, because that's all Marvel comics are now. Like, DC and still putting out Crises. Like, we literally had, I'm not kidding you, this is the actual title, we had Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths. That was, like, the event. That was what it was called. And, you know, I remember we had Final Crisis, which, funnily enough, wasn't really related to...
I mean, I always love it when they have Final Crisis, because it's never...
it's not the final one.
Ever.
Know.
It's Prime like 13, when it's the final chapter of who's it? Jason Voorhees. There's two final chapters, and none of them's the final film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, like, look, Crisis Infinite Earths, it's fun, has some really great moments, but, like, we just place and time, you know, and I don't think this is the place or the time for a Crisis story. So, also, Final Crisis is the best one, but it's, I don't know how you could, like, yeah. But, it's just time, isn't it?
So, thankfully, before
but it's
we...
still better than Dark Side War. Anyway, go on.
Before we get to the first part of Infinite Crisis, we do have three more films to get through. So, coming up, the next one we've got coming up is Scooby-Doo in Crypto 2.
Yay!
After that, we will have part 2 of the Justice League and Ruby crossover, where hopefully you don't have to have watched all the Ruby series for it to make any sense for the first 45 minutes.
That's fine.
Have fun.
Yeah.
After that, we're doing Christmas in April. Mm-hmm. Actually, Christmas in May, probably, with Merry Little Batman.
Yeah, nice.
And then, yeah, all we've got left is the Crisis films, and apparently there is a Watchmen film getting made. I've not seen
apparently.
Any evidence it exists.
There is zero, we don't really even know.
But that's, the only films that have confirmed releases are Infinite Earths Part 2, which comes out in April, and there is a Part 3. All I've heard confirmed for that is that that's going to be the last time Kevin Conroy appears as Batman and Mark Hamill's Joker. And that's all I've heard about that film.
How many times has the last time Kevin Conroy's been Batman?
Right?
Well, basically, I get the impression... what happened was it was going to be a nice surprise, and then Suicide Squad shat the bed so badly that they're like, no, it wasn't the last one. It's not the last time.
Right. Yeah. Well,
I don't know if I believe that.
Suicide Squad's bad, but like people are acting like they killed. They actually killed Kevin Conroy. It's like, no, it was just a voice job he did before he died.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it is the fact that it's Kevin Conroy. Secondly, it's meant to be the Arkhamverse Batman. And
I understand that, but, like, you know, what about all the other superheroes? It just doesn't matter that they're killed horribly too. No, because it's Batman. And I'm sorry, in those Arkhamverse games, Batman is the most boring piece of crap that almost ruins those games. Like... I'll go on a tirade if I keep talking about that, because it really annoyed me. Like, it's okay if the Flash gets his, you know, thingy cut off and humiliated, but no, not Batman.
To be fair, none of the other characters are established in that version. I mean, it
still locks them out of ever appearing in, like, in that universe.
Yeah.
You know, which a lot of people were looking forward to seeing, like, the Arkham universe take on others.
It's not always about... Yeah, I mean, it's not always just Batman. And, like, I think they're just using it actually to just play on Kevin Conroy's death. I don't think they care about his legacy. And we all understand that people die.
No,
definitely. And that people's last thing is their last thing. Like, you know, I think they just want to capitalize on one of our stars died. Which I think is actually a little kind of worse.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so Justice League War World should have been two films.
Yeah.
And it did feel a little bit like, whilst I like the Wild West thing, it was okay, and whilst I like the Batman medieval swords and sorcery thing, you almost, if the first half of the film had just been Ila Skataris or the 1950s thing with those three characters, I think that would have worked better, and then you'd have given the last half of it more chance to breathe.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, like, even though the end is a mess, I would still, like, recommend it. Just expect the end to be.
I think it's definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, it's just not gonna, like, it's just not gonna resolve that well. But, like, I just think it's like a thing that they don't really do. You don't really see. So, like, it's worth watching for that, like, if you're bored. I watched it, and I really enjoyed it. And, like, I got to the ending, and I was like, oh, well, that was really weird, but I still enjoyed it as a whole. It was just, it's just a bad ending.
I agree. So, anyway, one other thing that you could do if you're bored that would be maybe a better use of your time would be to listen to one of Connor's podcasts. What podcasts are you on at the moment?
So our last one's a Krypton, a Superman podcast that is being delayed because of illness and weddings, but we will have an episode up next week where we'll be covering Panic in the Sky, which is Cause for Panic, trust me. And on Iron Fist, I'll just put something up at some point. Sons of the Dragon, the Immortal Iron Fist podcast. That's the name of the podcast. So just when I'm, you know, less overwhelmed with projects, I will get an episode of that out too. And thanks very much for having me on the episode.
It's good to have you.
It was lovely to have you. Rebecca, have you appeared in any podcasts recently?
No.
Fair enough.
She's usually on Iron Fist.
I am.
Yeah. I'm still on the Rise of the Robots podcast. By the time this comes out, I think we'll be on to the final series of Robotica, which is basically what if instead of making robots fight each other, we made them do assault courses.
That's cool. Like obstacle courses?
Oh yeah, it's really good fun. Unfortunately, it kind of degenerates to 4 or 5 mazes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's really quite fun.
Cool.
Plus, it's quite clear that every time that you get the presenters, he's literally just coming off snorting a line. Anyway, we will be back in 2 weeks' time with Scooby-Doo and Crypto 2. Thank you for listening to the DCAU podcast. You can follow us on social media. We are at DCAU podcast on Twitter. Or you can email into us with either feedback on our show or on the movies we're about to watch at DCAUpodcast@yahoo.com. The DCAU podcast is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. Thank you for listening.